Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
That time of the week again, time for the Friday gathering, and I'm joined in the studio by Damien English, Minister of State with responsibility for Employment Affairs, Retail Businesses and Fine Gael TD for Meath West also. Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Fingal and Party Spokesperson on Enterprise, Trade, Employment and Workers' Rights. And Shane Ross, journalist, commentator and former minister. You're all very welcome. Thank you for being here today. Let's start with the restrictions. Damien English on the front of the Irish Times telling us today there's a bit of division going on over what should happen next. Where do you stand on what the next move is, to keep people on board but to strike the balance and keep people safe at the same time?
Well, the next decision on this will come up to the 5th of April, so it'll be next week and the week after. Cabinet will meet and we'll discuss all this with Neffert and go through the figures. Under the plan, the four kind of sets of data we have to look at is the virus under control? What are the numbers like? Are they going up or down? Again, we can see what's happening this week. They're back up into the 500s, which is concerning. There was some good progress made last week as you assessed this. The rollout of the vaccination and the strategy and how that's going. The hospital admissions, which are kind of steady at the moment, and then ICU beds as well. So all those four factors will play into this, as well as the positivity rate and the R rate, which again is over one. So the figures are not where you'd like them to be, and that's putting them mildly.
Yeah, but your area of responsibility.
Correct.
I mean, retail businesses and employment.
Yeah.
I mean, you must
It is, and I sit down with all the various stakeholders on our forum nearly on a weekly basis, trying to tease through this. And like everybody else, they're watching the figures, and they're very, very concerned. And the big ask for them is to naturally be reopened, and certainly to try to get back to click and collect and reopen as soon as they can.
Mm.
And that's an ambition. I mean, we're the Department of Enterprise and Trade. We'd like to have people trading.
It's very hard to understand why that can't happen. I mean, I got stuck in a traffic jam in the supermarket this week. It was absolutely packed. And why you can't have click and collect or have a boutique open with one or two people going in at a time?
Yeah, so what's behind it? What's the only way to really bring a virus under control is around to limit the mobility of people, stop the movements. And that's why, and in every sector, retail, of course, that I work with a lot, and many other sectors, can argue that in their space, the virus won't spread. But it's the movement of people around in between that. And we see alone in the last 3 weeks, there's a greater movement of people. And that's why the figures are going back up. So that's why there's restrictions there. They're really difficult. And I really feel for the retail sector or anybody in business, this is a really, really difficult time. Neffert's call last night and Neffert's advice, and again, this will be looked at over the next 10 days, is around, keeping our guard up. Don't let it slip in the last few weeks as we come closer to having that vaccination rollout. We know this all changes completely and utterly when we get to May and June in terms of the vaccination. But the big decisions will be what happens during April into May.
Yeah.
That's decisions for Cabinet next week.
And Louise, I'll bring you in here because we got a fair idea from Neffert last night what's going to happen. You know, no international travel until the end of June. Probably expected that. But, you know, work from home until the end of June. I think people would have been surprised to hear that coming from Neffert last night.
I think they might have been as well. And I think that there's a very real danger that the government are losing the trust of the public on this. People are exhausted. They're absolutely wrecked from the yo-yoing in and out of lockdown. And the problem is they don't see a credible plan to get us out of this. The only plan the government had, because they didn't make the effort in test and trace, we can see now it's hotel quarantines are weeks away, according to the papers today. So that work wasn't done. So the stay at home, protect our hospitals, protect our frontline workers, give us time, all of that. We gave, people feel like they gave a lot of time, and that a lot of that time was wasted. So we have a situation now whereby people are being asked to just hold firm and stay with it. And of course they should. And we're asking all of the people to do that. But I think they need to hear from the government some sense that they have a plan in relation to the vaccine rollout. Let me finish, Damien, if you would. Something really, really simple. Like 30,000 people missed their vaccine this week because of the AstraZeneca cancellation. So let's hear exactly when are those 30,000 people going to get their vaccines? Because the government have placed all of our eggs in the vaccine basket. But whether that's right or wrong, they have done that. And they are missing their own targets.
Vaccinating an extra 30,000 people isn't going to take us any further down the road.
Just come in on that. I mean, the only way to give guarantee that this is the last lockdown is to come out of it in a safe manner, first of all. But number two is the vaccination rollout. We can see all over Europe where the virus is going. The numbers are going back up. There's lockdowns been implemented in other countries now as well, similar to here. This has nothing to do with testing. The testing is at 100,000 a week. That's not the issue. And I'm surprised
that we've gone down. And tracing. How many contact tracers are employed? The testing and tracing
is not the issue. We know what happened in December and January with the new variant from the UK. And again, it's not to do with hotel quarantine either. But what it is to do with is the spread of a virus that was out of control. It's now back well under control. But is it enough to allow us to reopen? That's the judgment call. But on the vaccination strategy, and again, I'm happy to spend the whole programme going through that in detail, but where it's going to bring us to. By mid-February, we know this, and this is based on the supply that we know is going to come in and everything else. There's over 11,000 people.
So that's the plan.
Have been trained.
The vaccine strategy is the plan.
For people who want to know the long-term game here. So the very long-term guarantee you can give is that by mid-May, on all our predictions at the moment, with our teams in place, with the processes in place, and the supply, again, coming in as planned, we will be at that about 95% of the vulnerable population who are vulnerable to COVID will have had their second vaccine by the middle of May. 82% of us plus, all of us, will have had a vaccine by June. That's the permanent game changer we have to get to.
Now you must have your fingers crossed under the table now when you're saying that, because you're just reliant on this EU supply process, which hasn't worked up to now.
Well, yeah, but in fairness, Claire, no, I'm not just fingers crossed. On that supply, the increase on the supply and the guarantees were around the second quarter, which is April, May and June. We have planned everything to do with our vaccination strategy on those three key months. So far, all the guarantees on supply are on track for those 3 months. So we're pretty confident we can reach those targets.
But I'll make the point.
We have seen some reduction in the AstraZeneca, which was fed into the supply, but we've also seen an increase in the Pfizer.
Okay, so I want to bring in Shane Ross on this. Shane, how do you strike that balance between people saying, look, we've been in this for 11 weeks, we need to do something now to give people a bit of hope and a bit of freedom, but we also need to keep people safe?
I think it's very difficult, but I think that we've had a very bad week. What happened in Europe was obviously very bad. What happened to AstraZeneca was bad. We're at a critical period. The figures we're getting now, as Damien says, quite rightly, very, very concerning. The fact that we're stuck on the 500 figure, you know, every day or on average means that we're not actually making any more progress with the lockdown. But have we forgotten? This is something which seems to be emerging on this programme I was into earlier with Verona Murphy and others. Have we forgotten what happened in Christmas? And that is when government really lost the pack. At Christmas, they decided to lift the lockdown to an extent which was totally excessive. And we're now been paying the price of that for the last 3 or 4 months. The idea that we should lift it again, or even open the construction industry, seems to me very, very threatening at a very critical time.
In fairness to Verona Murphy, though, she was suggesting some opening up, but she was also saying that we should use antigen testing. And Professor Paul Moynihan, the immunologist, was saying, yes, she's right, we should be using antigen testing.
You should certainly be using every weapon we possibly have. But listen to your programme today. And listen to what we've heard from Poland and from Germany and from Italy and elsewhere today. Do we want to get back into that situation of a third wave? And we're now at a point which we couldn't have imagined last year, where the cure is here, where the magic potion is actually just in front of us. And we're in the danger of yielding to pressure and actually blowing it. We mustn't do that. But what Louise says, I think, is right. The government has lost the flock, I think. I think it's lost the people to a large extent and the public mood. But I think if we produced a plan and said, if we get the following will happen, and stick to the principle, not a politician's making decisions because they got it so badly wrong at Christmas, but stick to the principle of following NPHET.
So you're happy enough that NPHET made that announcement last night, which is pretty much what it was, and that NPHET should be making those decisions, government.
Well, they don't make decisions, but they make, I think, well, the government.
Look,
the government
we were told very clearly last night you're going to be working from home until the end of June.
Well, if the government had followed NPHET at Christmas, we wouldn't have been in the situation we were, where so many people were dying in January.
Okay. Do you think it's appropriate that NPHET said that last night, Louise?
Well, I think people need to hear from somebody. In the absence of a credible announcement from government, I think it is only fair to say to people, but I would say in relation to the working from home, and this is a particular bugbear of mine, The onus has been, and the Taoiseach has said this on a number of occasions, and indeed the Taoiseach as well, in relation to personal responsibility. We need to be ensuring that workers, where they can work from home, are working from home. So it's not enough to simply say to employers, please facilitate it. They really need to take some action on this and ensure that people are working from home and that that continues. So we saw back last March, you know, with the flick of a switch, hundreds of thousands of people started to work from home. And some of those have started to drift back to work, partly because they are under pressure from their employers. Now, that's not their personal responsibility or their personal choice. They choose to work. They
also
want to
for
earn.
Some people, it's impossible to work from home.
Just
for
various
reasons. And I completely understand that, but there needs to be cognizance taken that personal responsibility doesn't work if you're living in an overcrowded accommodation either.
I don't think there's any surprise with the working from home comment by Neffert last night. I mean, that nowhere was that in the comments. You look at last year, even when we had the £5 plan to come out and reopen last summer, at the very end of that was people could go back to work, and we never even got to that stage. So just bear that in mind.
Yeah, right?
Sorry. But number two,
we're always told. I'll let you come back in with your other points. But we're always told that it's government who makes the decision.
Yes.
It's government that makes
so
the announcement. Neffert advises government.
That's the point.
But that's
going
not
to make.
Where we are now.
So that's exactly the point I was going to make. What Neffert said last night and what Dr. Ronaldson said reflects exactly what the Taoiseach and Thomas said last week, that come April, it will be a very, very limited, if any at all, lifting of restrictions. They both said that very publicly last week and led out on this. So people wouldn't be getting their hopes up too much. There wouldn't be expectations. Again, I sat with the retail forum and we had the same conversation. So everybody's been saying the same thing for the last 2 weeks, including Neffert. And going back to who makes the decisions, and even for Christmas, it's joint decision. The Cabinet and the Government make decisions and take the responsibility absolutely with Neffert's advice and taking it on board.
Given that you're acutely aware of what retail are facing, you've just sat down with them in recent days, do you think there should be a limited reopening of retail?
Again, Clara, as we discussed at those forums, it's about the control of the virus and how safe is it to reopen. That's a judgment call you will make as you come closer to the 5th of April. As again, with the sector, nobody wants to reopen and go right back to where we were in January, because we want this to be the last lockdown. So a cautious reopening of society is the way to approach this. We'd all wish it was just like that, turned on overnight. It doesn't work that way. We have to get this right. It has to be safe and to protect lives. If we don't do this safe, and people said to me, but other countries have a different strategy. Other countries, when they're claiming they're going to reopen, seem to have an acceptable death rate that wouldn't be acceptable in this country. We are trying to protect lives here, and that's the strategy for the last year. It's the right one, but we need to know that we can get to a firm reopening and stay open.
Does that extend then to religious worship?
Again, as I said earlier on, every sector, right, and every sector makes be religious worship, and I've sat down with many people in that sector, the retail, sporting, everyone can say, look, in our place, it's not a problem. But it's the movement of people. And I think if Neffert are trying to achieve anything, it's to get into all of our heads that it is about movements and personal responsibility and the close.
So you're not in favour of increasing the number of people allowed to go to a funeral beyond 10?
Claire, no. With respect to you, it's a Cabinet decision taken on board, all this decision, all of us feed into that.
Yeah, but you're allowed to have a view.
But that's not, people are criticising, what you want is a firm decision and firm communication from that. We will all feed into that, but the numbers will dictate the pace of reopening. And it's the 19th of March, right? The decisions around the 5th will be made closer to the 5th. And again, let's see what happens with the numbers next week. Last week, the numbers were really going in the right way. We were in the low 300s for a couple of days in a row, where that's where you need to be and below. Mm. But to this week, we're not.
But you spoke about the other indicators, you know, the number of people
Correct.
In hospital and in ICU. And I just wonder now, as the more vulnerable people are vaccinated, should we be paying as much attention to those daily numbers? Because there may be asymptomatic cases in there. There may be cases of very young people who are not getting sick.
Really positive contribution, if you listen to Paul Reid yesterday, was when he said the number of cases in healthcare workers, I think it's down to 14, haven't been in the high hundreds, you know, close to 1,000 at one stage. So that would show that the vaccination.
So why are we relying on daily case numbers then to make decisions?
So again, it's not just the daily case numbers, it's all the criteria. As I said, there's four sets of data that are very, very important around this. the rate of the virus, the positivity rate and the R number are absolutely very important. Hospital admissions, which again are static. They're not going down. They're now static again. ICU beds, again, well down where it was in January. And then the vaccination rollout. So all four of that will be will feed into decision making before the 5th. And there's no point in me speculating.
And listen, I know that some people who get COVID get very sick. And I'm not, you know, dismissing that for one moment. Your view on religious worship, Louise?
Well, I think we have to be guided by the public health advice. But I just want to go back to a point that Damien was making there in relation to, you know, when the opening up is going to happen and how it's going to happen. And I think the government have been repeatedly criticised, not just by opposition parties, but widely across the media, for mixed messages and communication failures. So just give one very brief example on this. When the Taoiseach says, I'm going to go out and buy a clippers and I'm going to have to cut my own hair, 30,000 men and women working in the hair, health and beauty industry listen to that and they hear, okay, that's the message.
Can I just finish making mine, please?
They hear that and they think that's just a glib, off-the-cuff remark, and that's 30,000 people now looking at that and thinking, right, that's it. My going back to work has now been pushed back. Mm-hmm. So there's no disputing the government need to get the communication out.
Again, there's not mixed messaging. It's very clear messaging. And we engage with that whole sector, the hair and beauty sector as well. They know what's ahead of them. And they know, I know the effort they've gone to be able to prepare themselves as an industry to be able to reopen. But I want to refer to something. It suits Sinn Féin to constantly pick on ministers and say what they are mixed messaging. Let's not forget, last September, Mary Lou was campaigning for the pubs to be open.
No,
we'd all like them to be open.
No,
but she was demanding it.
Let me finish the point.
I sat in the Dáil in late November, early December, when we were discussing travelling and whether people could be allowed to travel home or not. We were saying that NPHET and the government's advice was still don't make plans to come home. It's not safe to do that. Mary Lou led the attack that wasn't fair. People should be allowed travel to come home. That was her lead in December. And now it suits Sinn Féin to say, oh, the government got it wrong in December. Like, let's be fair with this now. And let's really focus in on what everybody's saying here about providing leadership. We are trying, as a government, to work with NPHET to get this right.
Yeah.
And everyone's
Are you quick to throw stones, Louise?
Okay, so back in March 2020, I asked the government, would they look at the use of quarantine, either mandatory or voluntary quarantine? That wasn't done. Months and months were lost. We didn't call for the pubs to be reopened, but what we did was that people needed to hear a credible plan. They needed to know exactly what was going to happen and what was going to guide the government. We have said at all times, and believe me, Damien, I want the government to get this right.
I think your leader was on this programme on the day when she was on the front of the Star saying the pubs should be open.
And that was the headline. And if you read the article, what the article said was, we need to get test and trace right. We need to ensure that we can do that. We can reopen when we reopen and do it safely.
Yeah, I think the point is we have been guided by public health advice.
But
you can't say that everybody that you've been right all of the time either.
I'm not attempting to say that. What I'm saying is the government need to realise that people are hanging on their every word, and mixed messages and communication failures do not help matters. And I can tell you, because I was contacted by people working in the hair and beauty industry, they were devastated, and that was just a glib, off-the-cuff remark by the Taoiseach. It was really unfair to do that to people, and they need to tighten up on the communication. I'm not the only person saying this.
Claire, just to be clear on this. Mm-hmm. What the Taoiseach said was he was announcing a new scheme to support closed businesses called the ESPAS scheme, which again is €4,000 per quarter towards businesses who are closed. And in that same conversation, he was asked, well, who will this benefit? Who needs this? So it was in that context he was setting out the industries that are not allowed to reopen yet and who would need this money. And that includes barbers and hairdressers. Mm-hmm. And that's the point there. That's not mixed messaging. Now, you just asked me here 5 minutes ago to give my opinion. That's why I'm not doing it, because it doesn't help this. We have to have one decision-making body, which is the Cabinet, in conjunction with NPHET and the advice. We will set out this before the 5th of April, exactly where we're going. And the big ask here is that for the next couple of weeks, all of us, every one of us, redouble down our efforts to try to limit those close contacts.
People are making a huge effort at the moment, Damien. They really are.
I'm not sure that Shane Ross, you want to come in there?
Yeah, I think it's a great pity that we're wasting an enormous amount of time on this programme, and I don't want to sound lofty about it, with saying who said what when. This is about life and death. This is about saving lives. This is about getting vaccine into people's arms. And we're having here a spat about what Leo Varadkar said at Christmas, what Mary Lou said at Christmas. It doesn't matter what they said at Christmas. What happens is, what's really important is what the government does and what NEFIT does in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And we know that the vested interests you're referring to, you know, the religious, the schools, the restaurateurs, the vintners, they've all got a good case for reopening. But this is about not going back to where we were at Christmas. And I really I feel very, very strongly when I have to listen to this spat about who said what, scoring points, getting a few votes here when there are people actually dying in hospitals from this disease at the moment is really unworthy of everybody.
Leo Varadkar was mentioned there in the context of the hairdressers, and of course he was in the news starting on Sunday. The Sunday Times was the first to report it, I think the Sunday Independent as well, about the preliminary Garda inquiry, which has been upgraded now to a formal investigation. Shane Ross, I'm interested to get your take on this. How politically damaging is the whole issue for Leo Varadkar, not just him, for Fine Gael?
Yeah, I think it has been damaging. I think obviously the damage was done last year when there was a vote of no confidence taken by Sinn Féin in Leo Varadkar. And I think he was damaged. You know, he was riding high on a COVID high at the time in terms of popularity, and his credibility I think was down. Now he's still, I think according to the opinion polls, he's still the most popular leader, just marginally ahead of Mary Lou McDonald, as far as I gather. I'm open to correction on that. But I think that the idea that that he should resign is wrong. We got to presume that a guy is innocent. And just because a story leaked to the newspapers last Sunday, I don't think we can have, you know, people assuming or resigning office.
I think the Gardaí have confirmed that they're conducting a formal investigation.
They
but
have.
Your view is he shouldn't resign. Sinn Féin says he should.
I think there should be a presumption of innocence for him for the moment. And, you know, the political damage was done in the Dáil, which is the right place for it to happen.
OK. And Louise, you're saying not just stand aside while this investigation is happening without prejudice. You want him gone.
My opinion hasn't changed since last November when we moved the motion of no confidence. When he was Taoiseach, the now tarnished leaked a confidential document to one of his mates that conferred an advantage on them. We know that it did. The document wasn't in the public domain. He didn't act in the public interest. All of the arguments that they have put forward have been effectively deconstructed, not just by ourselves in the opposition, but also by those in the media. So I don't believe his position is either tenable or credible. I didn't believe it back in November, and my position hasn't changed since then.
Okay, damaging is what everybody agrees on, Damien English. This is not a good place for Fine Gael to be when your leader and the tánaiste is the subject of a formal Garda investigation.
Clare, the tánaiste himself addressed this on multiple occasions in the Dáil last November, and he said himself, hands up on this, what he did was wrong and it was inappropriate and it wasn't best practice. And he, of course he would rather it didn't happen. So he said that. He's been totally open and honest about this and every last little bit of detail about this. So I think that the call, the political call from Sinn Féin that he needs to resign is a crazy one, to be honest with you. But anyway, let's be fair with this. A complaint was made then to the guards last November. They have to do their job and have an investigation. There's no surprise there. There's no story there. That's what they have to do, and they should be let do their job without political interference from Sinn Féin or anybody else for that matter.
But it is politically very difficult for you, particularly with what's going on at the moment.
But again, the tarnisher, and I think most people understand this, there was no motive here bar trying to bring on board all the GPs to vote.
Well, now the Gardaí will decide what the motive was.
Exactly, but I'm saying the public that I deal with, I meet every day of the week, right? And number one, number two then, the document was in the public domain, and this constant claim by Sinn
Féin. No, it wasn't.
The Minister for Health couldn't get a copy of the document.
No, the Minister for Health.
Come on, stick to the facts.
Can I please, Claire?
Stick to the facts.
I think it's well recorded on the Dáil record. And in these studios, that this document was in the public domain. It was released by press release by 4 or 5 agents.
Sorry, the Minister of Health couldn't
No, no, it had gone through Cabinet. When a document is to be finalised, there's always bits of changes in the last couple of weeks. The Minister for Health did have it, but he wanted the most absolute, final, up-to-date version. That's what he was... That's about.
The one that Matthew O'Toole was given.
The document... Because there's 4 or 5... When a document has been finalised, because I know myself when you're bringing documents through departments, there's always tweaks and changes right up to the very last day. The trust of the contract, the trust of the arrangement was all in public domain.
No,
it was discussed openly, publicly.
Is that right, Louise?
And it is
It wasn't.
It's very right.
Let's look at the facts. Okay, so the leader of Fine Gael, as we know, is under investigation by the National Bureau of Criminal Investigations, and that has to take place. Politically, however, and that's the arena I'm in. I'm not a Garda, nor would I like, seek to involve myself in their affairs.
It looks savvy, though.
Politically speaking, the Tánaiste has given what amounts to effectively a cock and bull story. There is not a chance that that document was in the public domain, Damien. You know it wasn't in the public domain.
Can I come in there? And you can't go through the record two of sessions of the Dáil and make up facts.
Damien,
if it was in the public domain, what's he apologising for? If it was in the public domain, why are the Gardaí investigating?
If it was in the public domain, why was he sending it to Matthew O'Toole? Because if something's in the public domain, just bear with me, because if something's in the public domain and say I want Claire to know, I'll text Claire a link to that, and I'll say, Claire, happy days, that's in the public domain, so there you go, here's the link. If it's not in the public domain, I'll print it off and I'll have someone send it.
Claire, make the point. What I'm saying is,
it was marked confidential for a
reason. The details and the money involved and all the decisions were already in the public domain. There was public meetings about it. There was press statements and releases and so on. The wording of every last piece is what still had to be completed. But nothing, it had gone through cabinet. It had been dealt with and had been announced.
Okay.
The Tánaiste, just to be clear on this, right, has gone into the Dáil on two formal occasions, and many of us, because Sinn Féin want to keep going back over the same old ground, and explained everything. Trust me, you can't go into the Dáil and make up things. You don't do that. That's not what you can do if you're a government minister or a Tánaiste. And he hasn't done that. And to be very clear.
We know, though, that Fine Gael and the government as a whole was fairly quick, Shane Ross, to get rid of Dara Cailleary and to get rid of Barry Cowan. I mean, what does this say, this situation, and Damien's defence of Leo Varadkar say about different standards, or if it says anything?
Well, I think what it tells you, I'm prepared for this to go to the investigation of the Guards and to leave it at that in this case, and I think he's perfectly entitled to that. He's entitled to the presumption of innocence. Of course, if he's charged and convicted, of course he shouldn't be there. What does he say about double standards of Fine Gael? I think that's a very fair question. I think there are double standards in Fine Gael, the double standards in Fianna Fáil as well about this and Golfgate, and it's something that they should be able to reconcile themselves to. But politicians have always been that way. I mean, Fine Gael is not the kind of guardians of the national morality, even though they pretend to be. When it suits them, of course, they have different standards as well. That's unfortunately the way political parties operate.
Do you accept that, Damien?
Like yourself, Shane, I try to have the highest standards, and we always do. But to be clear here, what Leo, you asked me, what did Leo apologise for? He apologised because he didn't do this in a formal best practice way. Yes, it was put in the post to a colleague to read. That's what he's saying wasn't best practice. Yeah. But again,
Damien, you're doing your best to minimise this.
So what has to happen?
And it's still not going away.
Just let him make the point there.
So some other person in society has made a complaint to the Gardaí. Under what law, I'm not sure, and the Gardaí have to investigate that and make a decision. Now, a similar process is happening with other politicians around the country, and you don't see Fine Gael looking for people to resign, because that's not the way it works. That's not how justice works. And we should let the justice system do its job. I trust the Gardaí to have their investigation and make their conclusions. And that's what they have to do.
But Phil Hogan, to be fair, Damien, got a pretty rough deal.
Shane Ross is just speaking there. You just put your headphones on. Go ahead.
Sorry, Phil Hogan got a pretty rough deal out of Golfgate. If other members of Fine Gael are going to survive allegations of this sort of behaving unethically, I think there is a double standards issue here. We could go back and revisit the Phil Hogan issue now.
Okay, well, we're not going to do that because we're out of time, and it's Friday at midday, and I wanted to say thank you very much to Louise O'Reilly, to Damien English, and also to Shane Ross.